Good morning, and welcome to this news event sponsored by my firm, Pfeiffer Wolf Carr & Kane, and the firm of Meyer Wilson. My name is Joe Pfeiffer. Before I dive into my statement, I ask that you keep all of your questions until the Q&A period. We promise we'll be here and we'll be available to answer all your questions. You'll be hearing from me today and three other speakers in the following order. First, you're going to have Tony Chiazzo Neff. She's the whistleblower, the one who stood up courageously to Wall Street and told the truth about GPP. Next, you'll have Courtney Wernick, an attorney from Meyer Wilson, and finally, my partner, Jason Kane of Pfeiffer Wolf Carr & Kane. We're here today for two reasons. First, to hear the story of the whistleblower, Tony here. And second, to announce the most significant class action filed to date against GPP Capital Holdings. I am astonished to see that there is still news coverage out there that treats GPP as a real business enterprise instead of the Ponzi-like scheme that two of its former executives have described it as. As the lawsuit that we filed today shows, GPP Capital was rotten to its core from day one, and it is a financial scheme that has taken over $2 billion from hardworking Americans. You'll hear in a few moments from the whistleblower who exposed the GPP Capital scandal. The story is as shocking as it is true. Here's what she uncovered. GPP was a Ponzi scheme with connections to the Russian mob, rife with conflicts of interest and illicit sources of funding. The Pfeiffer Wolf Meyer Wilson lawsuit being filed today, in fact just filed, names GPP Capital CEO David Gentile, CFO William Jacoby, and a series of limited partnerships, including those for auto, waste management, and cold storage, and a host of other individuals and auditors. After our firms have spent hundreds of hours and tens of thousands of dollars, I can tell you this. The simple truth is that GPP Capital was rotten to its core from day one. Behind the public-facing facade of GPP Capital and its funds lurked a complex web of shady entities and individuals who propped up, facilitated, and financially benefited from every phase of the GPP Capital Ponzi-like scheme. It's like a bad onion, where every time you peel a stinking layer off of the outer surface, you found another layer of rot underneath. In the case of GPP, each putrid layer ultimately profited off the unwary investors who put nearly $2 billion of their hard-earned money into the GPP machine. Here's some of what we found. The Russian crime connections to GPP. While the GPP Ponzi scheme formally began in 2013, the seeds of this fraud were sowed years before when CEO David Gentile became involved with a reputed Eastern European organized crime family headed by Mikhail Chernaya, a.k.a. Michael Cherny. Gentile's relationship with Chernaya, his organization, and his family ultimately led to GPB's first portfolio assets and GPB investor funds flowing to Chernaya's organization. Michael Chernaya's ties to foreign crime syndicates, the mafia, and Russian oligarchs are well documented and extensive. He's been denied a visa by the United States. He's been barred from Bulgaria. He's been wanted on Interpol. Yet he has made millions off the backs of hardworking Americans. Impossible financial promises. With 8% going directly off the top to brokers and another big chunk going directly to the GPB principals, it was economically impossible for the GPB funds to return a real profit, meaning not investor money, but a real profit to investors. Massive conflicts of interest. The principals behind GPB Capital first put together entities to serve as underwriters as the GPB funds. In other words, the people that were running GPB also set up the underwriters that were going to fund GPB. This kind of self-dealing is flagrant, and it's an outrageous conflict of interest. GPB. How do we remember that in my office? Greedy problem brokers. That's part of the story here. Blinded by sky-high commissions of 8% or more, brokers sold the limited partnership investments to investors and other class members, and the brokerage firms knew or should have known that this was a Ponzi-like scheme, knew or should have known that it had ties to a crime family, knew or should have known that it was rife with conflicts of interest. But they sold it anyway. Why? because of the outsized commissions that GPB was offering. Why was GPB having to offer those kinds of commissions? So that people wouldn't look deeper. Auditors papered over abuses. Auditors and other helpers. You don't have a $2 billion Ponzi scheme without people that helped. You have auditors that covered up the misdeeds, that papered over the problems, and ultimately, without these kinds of helpers, $2 billion could not have been raised from hardworking Americans. And that is just some of what we've uncovered. We have limited time, but we have this, like I said, is an onion. And it's like the biggest, rottenest onion I've ever seen. Every time we look around the corner and every day we discover something new and worse about GPB Capital. But it really, a lot of this goes back to the work of Tony, who's here with us today. Tony Cazzo-Neff is a hero to me. She's a brave individual who's done investors an immense public service by operating ethically under pressures to act otherwise. She refuses to knuckle under to the forces of greed and graft and instead stands up for what is right. How rare is that, and how sad is it that that is rare? Our firm and our clients will not be intimidated. You'll hear what has happened to Tony as a result of her trying to blow the whistle. You'll hear her story of discovering GPB's rotten core, her story of attempting to save investors, and the system's utter failure to protect her and investors. And you'll hear about the recent intimidation tactics trying to silence her. To those that wish to intimidate Tony into silence, I have a message for you. Don't go after Tony. Don't go after her family. I'm here. I'm going to be here until we get the last dollar back for investors, until we find out exactly what happened here. My name is Joe Pfeiffer, P-E-I-F-F-E-R. If you want to come after anybody up here, leave Tony and her family alone. Come after us. It's my pleasure now to invite Tony Cazzo-Neff to the podium to make a statement. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for that introduction, Joe. This is all a little nerve-wracking and overwhelming, but I'm glad to be here today. You probably noticed the security as you came into the room. That's what my life is like these days. The local police where I live know to keep an eye out for me, and they already know we had a nearly bad situation when the lug nuts were loosened from the wheel of my car. I'm stepping out into the public spotlight today because it makes me safer and because it's the right thing to do. Before I begin, I want to thank Pfeiffer, Wolf, Karin Hayes, and Meyer Wilson for the work they have done. In many ways, they have picked up where I started with GPB Capital, and I am glad to be able to work with them. I spent several years as a financial examiner at what was once called NAFC regulation and is now called FINRA. In 20 years of doing this kind of work, you learn how to play by the rules and you pretty much end up thinking that you've seen everything. That's what I thought until I saw GPB Capital and the whole constellation of entities, people, brokerage firms, auditors, and others that made it possible. I first became aware of GPB Capital in 2016 when I was asked to conduct due diligence on the firm from my employer, Persh Kaplan Sterling Investments Incorporated. Initially, Persh Kaplan accepted my recommendation against having anything to do with GPB Capital. But over time, the lure of 8% or higher commissions on GPB had the same effect at Persh Kaplan that they did at scores of other brokerage firms. When Persh Kaplan management later went around me and decided to sell GPB Capital against my recommendation, I reported the situation to FINRA and was then fired. Later, I also reported my concerns on a confidential basis to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. I refused to change my views because my due diligence uncovered a complex scheme which was rife with conflicts of interest, dubious players in the United States with checkered backgrounds, and later, connections to organized crime in Russia. Worst of all, it was apparent that GPB Capital was not set up as a business, but as a flim-flam scheme. It was all there in black and white in a way that any practiced financial examiner, compliance officer, or due diligence officer could see. What did I take away from all of this? It would be nice to think that Wall Street cleaned up its act after Bernie Madoff, but what I found in my research at GPB Capital was another massive Ponzi-like scheme that was designed to strip money from investors, all while appearing to be conducted by a legitimate, above-board Wall Street company. The truth is that CPB Capital hid behind a paper-thin veneer of respectability that could be easily pierced with routine due diligence work. I'm astonished that U.S. brokerage firms, large and small, allow themselves to be blinded by big commissions, and in so doing, willingly got in bed with GPD Capital. By refusing to go along with this, I lost my job and was made a pariah in my industry. When Michael Combs, the SEC official who was indicted by the Justice Department, left the commission, he took confidential investigation files to his new employers at GPD Capital. I have no doubt in my mind that they now know exactly what I exposed about them before. That is why I am glad to see a broader and concerted effort underway to expose the full extent of what GPD Capital has been doing and to find justice for the investors who have been victimized. Thank you. That concludes my opening statement.
Good morning. My name is Courtney Learning, and I'm an attorney at the law firm of Meyer Wilson. My law firm took the laboring oar in putting together the class action complaint that was filed just this morning on behalf of GPB investors. Together, our two firms, Piper Wolf and Meyer Wilson, have recovered hundreds of millions of dollars for investors, and our combined experience, sophistication, and resources make our team unmatched in this area. GPB Capital and its filthy affiliates are the focus of today's class action filing, but I want to spend a minute to talk about the wolves that are not in the room and are not in the class action case. And that's the greedy, unscrupulous broker-dealers that peddled the fraudulent scheme onto their clients solely to generate enormous commissions for themselves. What Tony's story highlights is a serious problem in the industry. Brokerage firms intentionally burying their heads in the sand, ignoring outrageous red flags that should have prevented them from selling GPB to anyone, period. What Tony uncovered during her investigation was not buried deep beneath the surface. Any reasonable inquiry into GPB would have uncovered the irreconcilable conflicts of interest and probable fraud. Doing that investigation for the brokerage firms is not optional. It's required in this industry. But more than 60 brokerage firms across the country approved GPB for sale on their platforms, thereby knowingly offering their clients a financial ticking time bomb. In addition to the class action case, we are filing dozens of individual cases around the country against the brokerage firms who sold the scheme to its customers. So rest assured, we plan to also hold the brokerage firms responsible for their own reckless conduct, one brokerage firm at a time. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jason Kane, and I'm a partner at Piper Wolf Carr & Kane. As the attorney who has spent the most time working with Tony, I want to spend just a few moments talking about the process that she's gone through as a whistleblower and the details I've been able to verify while working with her. Tony was doing what I think we all hope broker-dealer firm employees around the country do. She simply was doing her job, discovering the conflict of interest that existed between the principals of GPB and what appears to be the first asset within the GPB portfolio was not difficult. She used Pacer and Google. These are two search engines that legal and compliance professionals use or should use on a daily basis. Her investigation led to a simple and obvious discovery. David Deck Gentile was an owner of two car dealerships with the Chernaya family. Those dealerships were ultimately purchased by GPB in May of 2013. The Ponzi scheme, GPB, the Ponzi scheme of which David Gentile was and is the CEO of. The conflict of interest here was obvious and caused Tony to recommend to her broker-dealer firm to stay away. And frankly, that should have been the end of it. And I've got to say, having verified what Tony discovered, everyone who sold GPB, every broker-dealer firm who sold GPB, should have discovered this and stayed away. What happened next to Tony is horrible and should scare every honest financial industry employee. 1 year after she told her broker-dealer firm to not sell GPB, Tony's brokerage firm, apparently blinded by commissions, decided to sell GPB despite the obvious conflict of interest that she had discovered. When Tony refused to be silent about the harm that this would cause those investors, she was ultimately fired, and she's been shunned by the financial services industry. This all just for doing the right thing. Having spent hours talking to Tony, and then hours independently verifying her investigation, Tony's findings that GPB CEO was conflicted and had ties to a Russian organized crime syndicate are true, right there in black and white, and would have been available to anyone willing to dig just a little bit below the surface. The fact that $2 billion was raised after Tony made these discoveries, after she discovered this conflict of interest, is appalling to us. As mentioned, our two law firms have teamed up and dedicated ourselves to recover every dollar possible for the hardworking Americans who were scammed by this $2 billion Ponzi scheme. We are now going to open up the Q&A session of this event, and we look forward to answering any questions about what we've been able to verify, as well as Tony's situation.
Sure.
Hey, Joe. Tony, hey. Bruce Kelly, the best.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Thanks for putting this together.
Sure.
Tony, just to be clear, we filed a lawsuit last year against First Kaplan?
2018.
Okay.
That's right.
It's almost a year and a half ago. You said in the press release you had strange incidents recently that someone did some tampered with your car. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Like what's been going on and for how long? Is this recently or has this been going on for 2 years or what in the state of your mind through all this too, please?
Recently, since the announcement of Michael Cohen being indicted.
Which was a couple of weeks ago or something.
Correct.
Right?
There's been a series of events that have left some concerns. Local police departments in my area are on alert.
What happened?
It appeared that I was being followed by vans. Most recently, over the weekend, it became apparent that someone loosened all five lug nuts on the back left wheel of my car.
Right.
And I was driving and the wheel almost fell off.
Describe what it was like. You talked a little bit to me about last night about what it felt like in the car. And
sure. So, you know, it began as just slight thumping, but it became worse and worse to the point where, it felt like the back end of the car was going to fall off. And I finally pulled over thinking, oh, I must have a flat tire or something. And I got out and the back left wheel, I mean, it was apparent two of the lug nuts had been sheared off from the wobble of the tire. Another two were ready to go, and a third one was, right behind them. And when I pulled over, you're not used to seeing your back tires turned.
Right.
This wheel was turned. So it was apparent that, had I kept driving, the wheel would have fallen off.
Right.
And my mechanic said, he has never seen all five lug nuts come off like that
in
his years of experience.
Talk a little bit more about how you felt like you were being followed and the license plate, et cetera, just so they have an idea.
Sure. So the day after the announcement of Michael Cohen's indictment, I had gone to a kickboxing class that ended at 9 o'clock, and I purposely parked my car right by the door so I could keep an eye on it, and class ended, and I was at the back of the group. As we were leaving the studio, two women at the front of the group, I heard them say, well, that's very weird. Why is that white, creepy van just parked there?
Right.
And I, immediately perked up, and the instructor was walking with me, and as we all went out, it suddenly backed up and pulled out. And it had been directly across from my car. And the instructor was able to get the plate and, it went online and tried to run it, and whatever platform he used, it came up as no such plate registered in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And he even said, to me, reach out to the owner of the studio and just confirm that he didn't contact this, it was an oil company servicing man, contact him and see if maybe he had called this company for servicing, and the owner said, I didn't.
and it was just parked there. There was no, and the studio was, had a standalone parking lot, not part of a strip mall, you know, a shared parking lot. It has its own dedicated parking lot. And as soon as we all walked out, and I don't know if maybe they heard the women, because they were quite loud, and I said, okay, that's really creepy. It backed out and pulled away.
Right. Joe, I got another one for you.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Go for it.
Thank you, Tony, for all of that. I really appreciate that. Basically, from what I can gather here today, is that you're saying that Gentile, Dave Gentile and Chernaya, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly,
yep,
who's a Russian, has ties to the Russian mafia.
Correct.
They own two car dealerships together.
Correct.
In Staten Island, I imagine.
Right.
Actually, in upstate New York, one in White Plains and one in Oneonta.
Okay. Now, then Gentile forms GPB separately from those.
Right? That's right.
And GPB buys those car dealerships from himself and Chernaya. That's
essentially through a complex web of holding companies.
Right.
Yes, that's what happened.
That's the gist.
And then he uses that as the basis to go out to the broker dealers as saying, hey, we have this little, they call it private equity fund. It's not real private equity at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's what has.
Not as commonly understood.
Yeah, as commonly understood. Goes out to the broker dealers, uses that as his basis for his pitch to go out and raise more money, the $1.5 to $2 billion that he eventually gets.
Correct.
It's all built on that transaction.
Yeah.
It's built on that first rotten transaction, which
right.
was done rife with self-dealing and put them in a, you know, you can imagine if you're buying your car dealership with somebody else's money,
right.
you might overpay to some degree,
right.
and thereby putting them in a hole from the beginning and making it really this thing was impossible to go without more investor money. It just needed
right.
the money, the machine needed to be fed and fed and fed and fed in order for the investors to ever get their money back.
Where did Gentile raise the initial capital to buy those two car dealerships in upstate New York?
At this point, I don't know.
Okay.
It's through GPB.
Okay.
You know, GPB owns, you know, buys in May of 2013. I believe the same month GPB is founded.
And Tony, that's what initially raised your alarm bells, the red flag.
There were numerous irreconcilable conflicts of interest.
And that came across your desk in 2016 or earlier than 2016?
January 2016.
Because they'd already been selling by 2016, but not to the degree. I think it really,
that's
the
right.
were really primed in 2016, 2017 when they raised hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's right. And initially, the way that they raised the money were through two captive broker dealers. It was Axiom, right, and Ascendant.
Right.
And they were the two broker dealers that were selling this and raising the money in the beginning. They were, of course, captured and owned by
right.
some of the same people at GPB.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it, some of their accountants are even – there's even an accounting firm that serves as their accountant called GP&B. I mean, it's hard
right.
to make that
well,
up.
He's an accountant until his background is an accountant. Right?
Correct. But,
yeah.
I mean, again, it's just all over the place with
right.
the conflicts. And so what happened was they got a lot of this was sold initially by these two broker-dealers that were captives, and then they went out to try and raise
right.
more money with other broker-dealers.
About when did that start happening?
It happened initially prior to 2015. You know,
mm-hmm.
Tony sees this and says, no way.
Stops it.
Right.
And then something happens in 2017 where all of a sudden you can see that there's 62 broker-dealer
right.
firms raising money for GPB.
It goes from 2 to like 63, basically. I don't want to say overnight, but pretty quick. And in our
after 2015.
It was in the beginning of 2017, I believe, is when that happened.
So 2017 is really when it takes off.
Yeah, so just to get the timeline right, you know, this thing started in 2013 with the purchase of the car dealership. In 2016 is when it came across Tony's desk, and she said, no way that we should sell this stuff. In 2017, she's overruled, and presumably either due diligence officers at the other broker-dealers weren't paying attention,
right.
or they turned the other way, or whatever happened. But 60-some-odd broker-dealers now were selling it in 2017, and that just, you know, the thing just took off like a rocket ship, destined to fall to earth.
Can I ask Can I hit you with one more? I don't mean to monopolize.
You're allowed to do whatever you want, but if anybody else got questions, people, go ahead.
Before you ask your next question, I just wanted to open up on the phone because we have reporters listening.
Okay.
Operator, would you mind explaining how members of the media on the phone can ask a question?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star then two to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star then one to rejoin the queue.
Thank you, operator. We'll take Bruce's question now, and then we'll check back in for questions on the phone.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure.
There's been a lot of whispering and rumor-mongering about the background of David Gentile. You've illuminated one point of that, and that he has allegedly some connection here doing business
yes.
with a Russian mobster.
Correct.
The other is that he belongs to the Church of Scientology.
Correct.
Is there any evidence in your investigation or discovery that other Scientologists have invested heavily in GPB? Is there a Scientology money link at all here, to your understanding?
It seems to me that he is a Scientologist. There's nothing wrong with
right.
that. But that our investigation, and Jason, correct me if I'm wrong here, that has uncovered that it is what it was known as a what do they call it?
A WISE organization,
which is some sort of stamp of approval that
GPB was.
Yes.
Correct.
For Scientologists to invest in. So that is what we've discovered so far. There's more on that to follow, I
think. So the Church of Scientology gave it, GPB, the imprimatur of being safe for Scientologists to invest
in. Well, they said it was a WISE investment that stands for something.
Is that the acronym of some kind?
It is. World Institute Scientology Enterprises,
okay.
I believe.
Is there any criteria for getting that designation, or does it just mean that it's run by a Scientologist or...
At this point, I just don't know.
We just don't know. We don't know enough about it to be able to speak with authority like we do on the mob connection. We're digging on that, and we'll get to the bottom of it, I promise you. But, you know, I want to make sure that we're saying things that are only exactly true here and that we know for sure. But I don't know why you would seek out that designation if you weren't going to raise money from other Scientologists and use it as a stamp of approval.
I appreciate that.
Thank no you. Problem.
Yeah, I've got one, actually. Jack Green, Law 360, thanks for doing this, guys. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
So I know that the trash hauling companies, the GBP,
yes.
faced a lot of scrutiny in terms of, you know, some perhaps unrelated things with worker safety and things like that. I'm wondering if there were any sort of shady connections related to your investigation with those trash hauling companies.
Peeling back another layer of the onion, we do have, and I just don't think we have this dead to rights yet, but we have some lower level Italian crime figures that have been associated with waste management. I know that's probably a big surprise to everyone in the room, but that seems to be the case, although I don't have the details on that completely clear at this point.
And I'm also wondering if you could maybe trace the through line between Tony's report to the SEC and what Cohn ended up taking from there. I mean, it's...
Sure. You know, Tony first went and after, you know, being unsuccessful in getting her brokerage firm to do the right thing and then being shunted out the door for doing the right thing, she went to FINRA first, where she had previously worked, and ultimately then to the SEC, and she delivered her due diligence memoranda as well as other documents that detailed why she thought GPB should not be sold to the American public. Those documents were contained in the SEC's files. Given that the chief compliance officer, who's now been indicted for obstruction of justice, was working at the SEC, and the allegations are that he took the SEC file with him, I believe, to the interview at GPB, that is, you know, that is terrifying, honestly. How can that be? How can they let that happen? And now what we have is an organization with ties to criminal organizations, some ties, we don't know what, to the Church of Scientology, and they have all of Tony's work because it exposing her to a tremendous danger. And for what? Because they can't keep their ship in order? This has been a systematic institutional failure from the broker-dealers to the regulators all the way up and down the street. They should be ashamed.
So is Tony an official SEC whistleblower, or did she apply for that, or how did that?
She has applied. She applied for FINRA whistleblower protection status. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court said that applying to FINRA does not give you SEC whistleblower protection, hence some of the technical problems with their first lawsuit. We've now filed an SEC whistleblower complaint, and then we're coming back to file a case against the brokerage firm for not upholding the highest standards of commercial honor, which is fairly obvious to me. Let me just see if there's anybody on the phone.
Sure.
All right, if there's anybody on the phone, operator, go for it.
There are no questions at this time.
Okay, perfect. You're back.
Yes, so just to get a finer point on this, I mean, we're not sure what exactly the genesis of the SEC investigation was. It's not possible to say it was, like, Tony, the source of it, but it's safe to say that her report was, you know, a substantial part of their investigative file.
I would assume that. I would assume that it's in their files, if nothing else. Now, what kicked it off, why they do, I don't know that. I'm not going to know that. But I can't imagine it wouldn't have been part of the investigative files. And once it's a part of the investigative files and that gets leaked back to the wrongdoers, you know, that's about, I've been doing this now for 20 years. And, you know, I'm never shocked, but I'm always amazed.
And Tony, could you give us just a little more detail about how you turned up this connection with Chernaya? I mean, Jason, you mentioned that it was through Pacer and Google, but can you just maybe take us through?
Sure. So, I mean, when I was given the assignment to conduct due diligence on this product, you know, again, basically it was through Google and Pacer. You know, I was doing just a review of the key players, you know, members of management, owners, directors, and turned up, which it's a public record, I uncovered a letter that was an exhibit to a pleading in a New York lawsuit that basically outlined the layers of holding companies and the complex structure that the GPB players were using to, in my view, hide behind and position themselves on both sides of the transaction. And again, it's a public record.
What was the lawsuit related to?
It had to do with manufacturer approval of a change in ownership at GPB. So they were trying to bring Debray in, and it was Volkswagen that was objecting to it because they weren't given prior notice and given, apparently manufacturers have to give a seal of approval for any changes in ownership.
And that's dealership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said Chernaya is not allowed in the United States.
That's my information,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So how does a guy like Gentile go into business with a guy like Chernaya if he's not allowed in the United States, even though he does have children here and the like?
I mean, to be clear, you know, again, we are uncovering this onion, but I'll tell you that there are other numerous court filings that describe an entity called McKenna LTD as Michael Chernaya's essential, you know, fund that he uses to make payments to people like his daughters and his business associates. And it's McKenna, his daughters, and his business associates who own a holding company with David Gentile that initially owned those car dealerships.
So in other words, that's, to boil that down is ask him, but it's complicated.
Right.
You know, when there's enough money, there's apparently a way. And through a variety of holding companies, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously that should never be allowed to happen.
Right.
And if it does happen, it should never be allowed to be foisted upon retirees that spent their whole life working for you know, 20 years of good years that they could have at the end and now are stuck with a bag of nothing.
All right, I got one more.
Go ahead.
You have to take turns.
regarding, you know, a lot of the questions I'm getting from, you know, investors, from broker-dealers who sold this thing, is, well, there's got to be something there. You know, they own car dealerships, right? They own these things. So even if it is a fraud and we do lose, we're going to get back 50 cents on the dollar, 75 cents on the dollar. There's got to be something there. In your knowledge, based on your knowledge of this $1.5 to $2 billion that were raised, 20% has already been, they've already put out financial statements saying at least 20 to 40% is gone.
Was vaporized by commissions and kickbacks
and
fees,
whatever,
et cetera.
Right? So they've already said that. Is if I'm an investor today and, you know, I'm thinking about my money and I invested 100 grand into this thing, am I going to get through a class action? Am I going to see 50 grand? Am I going to see 25 grand? Or is there absolutely nothing? Is all the money gone?
So I'll answer the part about the lawsuits. I think that if there are broker dealers, you know, part of the problem with the system is there are broker dealers out there that are not properly capitalized. And so, but the broker dealers that sold this that have the money to pay the investors back should pay the investors back all their money, their attorney's fees and interest. That should happen. Through the class action, we hope to recover money on behalf of investors who have defunct broker dealers that sold this. And I can't really predict how much we're going to get back on that. As to what GPB is worth now, I'll say something. I'll turn it over to Jason for the details. But, you know, you've got a company now that had an auditor withdrawal. They kept promising financial statements. They're supposed to be, I think, on September 15th, they're going to release financial statements. Now they say by the end of the year or something along those lines. You know, I would love to think that it would be great and it would be lovely for investors if some audit like Deloitte comes in and says, you know what, we took a look at this and everything is cool. Like, there's really nothing was wrong here. But I think the chances of that happening are about the chances of us being struck by a meteor and wiping out the dinosaurs again.
Right.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. As far as what it's really worth right now, I don't know if we can tell, but Jason can give you the details.
There's no way to tell. I mean, we're talking about, you know, small car dealerships in upstate New York right now, trash hauling companies in Staten Island. We don't know what it's worth. And the only thing I'd like to add to Joe's is, Joe's statement is there are aiders and abettors out there, and they're named in our lawsuit too. You know, they were allowed to put out financial statements through the efforts of quote-unquote auditors. Those auditors were hired to make the investors and the investing public comfortable about GPB. And now with the FBI raid, you know, we've got auditors coming in and refusing to issue financial statements. That's where this is. And if you are an investor, you need to be looking at your legal rights. You need to be hiring lawyers to go and see what this is and to recover your losses.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I certainly don't think you can count on getting a bunch of money back from folks that have these kind of ties with organized crimes, these many holding companies, and this kind that participated in this kind of malfeasance. I mean, you know, hopefully there will be some assets there at the end of the day, but I think that that's a pretty big hopefully.
Right.
You know, anybody on the phone have anything?
There are still no questions at this time.
Anybody else in here?
Yeah, just to circle back real quick, what's the deal with him being barred from Belarus, Chernina? Do you guys have any more details on that?
Bulgaria, wasn't it?
Banned from Bulgaria for 10 years.
Yeah,
His connections to known organized crime syndicates in Europe.
Just troubling if you've ever been to Bulgaria. I have to. Lots of bad Bill Cosby sweaters and chains and leather jackets. Anyway, thank you. I appreciate everybody coming. I'll be around, Tony will too, if you want to talk afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.